All right, I'm here with the Lesser Scots. I had the Greater Scot on before. Is that your official like work title?
Unfortunately.
Do you have like a shared card, Scot and Scot, the Lessers?
It's become a collective noun kind of a thing, like nice. A lesser of Scots.
So it feels like we went anti-plaid today.
You and I usually wear plaid.
That's
we
right.
usually go the full lumberjack. I was a little disappointed. There were a number of polls on Twitter.
Yeah.
I was a little bit upset about that, mm-hmm. about whether or not I owned any other shirts.
You don't.
I want to remind people some of the great human beings have a closet full of the same shirt.
Yeah,
you know
it's
what I
mean? True.
You go to Guthrie's house, it's just jeans and then the red, and he goes, which red polo should I wear today?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes, I like this shirt. And yes, I'm a little bit offended that you care.
We should have worn red polos.
We should have worn
I almost did.
In solidarity.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it just wasn't. So you guys are here, obviously, to talk a little bit about some of the cool stuff that's coming out of your team. And also, we're taking questions. So why don't you give us the gist of the cool stuff that's happened today, Scot, and then we'll talk to you, Scot, as well. This is going to be such an easy interview.
Which Scot?
Scot.
Okay. I think the thing that, if you want to go one place, is go to get.asp.net, if you want to get ASP.net. That's a little micro site that we made. We hung it off of the main www.asp.net site. And what's great about it is it will sniff your browser. It'll figure out what kind of an operating system that you're on, and it'll suggest the download for you if you're on Linux, on Mac, on Windows.
If you're on a phone, it'll actually show view source.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Because you can't, run it on
You
on
couldn't
your phone
get yet. An easier URL?
No.
That's
I thought
right.
get.asp.net is pretty actually good.
It is good. So what about the core CLR and sort of the RC and the Go Live stuff? Tell us about that.
The big thing for me, when I think of the RC, is we have SQL client support for the first time. So we have SQL client support that works on Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Wow.
First milestone for us to get that in. So I'm really excited about that. You can, data's been one of the things people fought on. And now you can actually get great data support across all the platforms with the RC we released today.
That's fantastic. All right, so we're going to get to the questions. There's a ton of them coming in. Where can I find some of the cool demos that Scot Hanselman showed?
So the team that I work with to make these demos, we've been doing them all in GitHub. Right now they're in a private GitHub repo, but we're going to pull some of those out. We need to remove some URLs. You don't need to see my blood sugar.
Sure.
Probably a couple weeks we'll get a smaller version of these that you can go and run yourself. But yeah, we'll give you all of this code. We just need a little bit of time to tidy up.
Cool. Let's talk about, there's another question about Owen and Katana. How do they fit in the new ASP.net? I know a lot of the stuff was sort of inspired by Owen and Katana. Why don't you tell us about that?
So yeah. Katana was actually the predecessor to the ASP.net that we have, ASP.net 5 that we have today. So Katana was at where the K in Project K came from, which was our code name that we used way back in the time.
Yeah.
So Katana was kind of a test bed of turning ASP.net into middleware that you plug together as building blocks to build a framework. Uh-huh. And so those bits are pretty much still out there, and they're good, but ASP.NET 5 is the next generation of those bits. And then Owen was something we were looking at, just of how do you actually take ASP.NET and make it not be completely tied to IIS.
Right.
The ASP.NET that we shipped for all these years has been completely bolted to IIS, and we knew as we wanted to go cross-platform, we were going to have to unhook those things. And so we started looking at technologies like Owen as a way to break that abstraction between the framework and the web server, and allow us to plug in other models, including the Kestrel web server that we use today for ASP.NET 5.
Right, and Owen is Open Web Interfaces in .NET, and that's a open source project that describes an interface for middleware. And then while ASP.NET 5 is not based on Owen, you can use Owen middleware and plug it into our middleware pipeline.
Right, we have support in ASP.NET 5, so you can actually plug and run Owen middlewares today.
That's awesome. So it's not like they went away. They literally inspired some of the work in Project K and what it is now. And then Owen still can plug into the infrastructure.
Exactly.
It's all copacetic.
The same middleware you wrote in Katana can plug in as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. What about VB.NET in ASP.NET 5 or .NET Core? Is it over? I don't know why people always ask that.
We shipped a blog post late last year, and we talked about this. And we basically said where we are today is we're just trying to ship the product. And so our goal right now is to ship ASP.NET 5 with C# support. As soon as we have that, we're then going to come in and put VB support in as well.
And it's not going to take like a long time thereafter, is it?
No, we're trying to make sure that we have to go where the base is.
Yeah.
And in the short term, like you said, you ship it. In the longer term, you make sure that VB.NET can use ASP.NET. You make sure F# can use ASP.NET.
Basically, what will happen in that time frame is we'll see if we can make the compiler part pluggable so we can actually switch compilers out. And so it could be VB.NET, it could be F#. One thing we will do, though, is the markup files, the Razor files, they're going to just stay Razor files. So
right.
what the language support will be you can write your controller and your source code in C Sharp, VB, F Sharp, whatever.
And then won't we change the extension for Razor files? Right now it's CSHTML. It'll just be kind of Razor.
We want to change it. Unfortunately, it affects a lot of teams in Microsoft to change it.
Oh, you can't change the extension?
It's not trivial.
Oh, that's a bummer. Rename all.
It actually affects tons of subsystems inside of Visual Studio.
I mean, people are using this stuff all over the place. I mean, it's got to, like, I imagine, like, let's make this change. Yeah, it's a great idea, but you probably are supporting so many customers and doing so many different things that it's not as easy to do little things.
Even inside of Visual Studio itself, like, we're going to go, that would break the editor team if we go make these changes. So we have to go partner with a lot of teams to go make that change. Okay. Seems trivial, but it's a large product, lots of pieces, they all have to plug in together.
So here's a good question from Mike. There's a lot of JavaScripty things happening. Is Microsoft working on bridging the gap between .NET backends and JavaScript frontends so that applications can be described in C#.NET and transpiled into JavaScript?
That's kind of there's a lot going on
there. Yeah, we need to peel the onion a little bit.
So Mike says, bridging the gap between .NET backends and JavaScript frontends. So that's a problem set. Yeah. That's something to think about. And there is a lot of cool work going on about that. In fact, you can go and see some of the cool stuff that Steve Sanderson did up on Channel 9. One of the things that the ASP.NET team did that's a little bit different than from other teams is we recorded the MVP Summit, right? Mm-hmm. This is our kind of secret insider cabal. We're not really into insider cabals anymore, so we just recorded it and we're putting it out on Channel 9. At that insider summit, Steve Sanderson showed a way to have what we're calling ASP.NET Node Services, where Node can be involved in an application where you have a little bit of Node and a little bit of ASP.NET, where theoretically some client-side templates could compile on the server side. So that's the beginning of asking questions of, like, what does a great Angular app look like if ASP.NET is involved? So that's one aspect of bridging. Now, then the gentleman continues on to say applications being described in C# and transpiled into JavaScript. That's a little bit more complicated. Now, there are technologies out there. There was ScriptSharp. There's JSIL. JSIL is a really great and amazing application framework that lets you take, like, XNA games written in C# and transpile them to JavaScript. But that's a big statement to do that, and I don't necessarily think that that's something that we're looking at doing.
No, our first focus is going to be on improving the performance of a JavaScript application. So, for example, on a server-side payload, we could take the data from your application and inject it in the page, and so the JavaScript doesn't have to make a call back to the server to get that data. That's an area that we want to look into. Steve showed some of that. Another thing we want to look into is we have this cool feature called Tag Helpers, and we wrote Tag Helpers for all of the HTML dot things that we had in MVC today. HTML.textbox. Mm-hmm. And with Tag Helpers, that allows us to do a server-side rendering the first time and then give you some client-side markup as part of that as well. And so we're investigating, can we do Angular, React, Tag Helpers, which would increase your productivity when you're trying to write a application with ASP.NET that uses client-side as well.
Right, phrasing it a little differently, any points of friction that you have in your day-to-day life as you move between C# and JavaScript, we should remove those.
Exactly.
Those points.
And that's an interesting thing, because the web is like this really hodgepodge of all kinds of software development. You have the back end, you have the front end, and the front end is some spa-like application. You got to make sure these somehow are bridged. What are we doing in the tooling side to sort of make this all a lot copacetic, a lot better?
Well, there's a lot of things happening at the command line right now. Yeah. There's a lot of people who want to pick their editor, and they want to spend time at the command line, and they want to use Bower and NPM, and they want to use NPM commands, and it's all a command line world. They're using make, you know, stuff like that. They're using grunt, they're using gulp. But at the same time, there is a class of developer who doesn't want that. When we say integrated IDE, IDE, we mean integrated. We want that experience to be there. So what we're doing is we're taking those little tools, and we're enabling them to be called by Visual Studio. Mm. So we enable choice. If you want to go and get something from NPM, you can do that from the command line, and Visual Studio will understand it. But if you want to use a visual interface to do that, and then we'll call that external command, then we'll do that as well. So you have to support both the command line hacker and the enterprise, integrated development environment.
And we'll take that further in a couple of other ways as well. So, for example, as part of the RC that we launched today, we have this new support. If you open an HTML file up, we're going to recommend extensions for you. So we're going to go out and say, here's some extensions we recommend for this particular file that you've opened. One that we recommend today is a Bootstrap extension. And what it does, I don't know if you've written Bootstrap before. It's a great framework for making apps that work great on desktop and mobile. But typically what you're going to do is you're going to go to the Bootstrap page and look up what you want to do. And so how can we make that easier? We've had snippets, but if you don't know the name of the snippet, it's not going to really help you. So this extension that we have today will actually put the toolbox back in and give you all the common Bootstrap items in the toolbox. You drag them in, and then you just fill in the blanks to finish them out.
Right, so if you want a panel or a carousel or whatever, you drag it off of the toolbox where you would think of things as being a visual designer, but what you're really doing is bridging the visual designer toolbox with the rich HTML editor, and you're getting IntelliSense when they, you know, when they want it.
Right.
Little things like that.
I love the sort of the, you've made this sort of grade of like there's the Vim gal that always uses Vim, all the way to the pointy clicky person guy that loves it. And we are going to support all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all comers, anyone who's interested.
Those point and clickies have been our traditional base. We want to make sure we don't leave those alone as we go and focus on.
Make sure that we don't disrespect people who point and click.
I'm a point and clicky man. Let's be honest with
you. You've admitted like a new class of the pointy clickies.
We're not going to hashtag this, are we? Oh my goodness.
It's happened already.
Al says, if I use the dev branches on GitHub for ASP.NET, can I use .NET Native right now?
Okay, so there's an interesting point. So we've got a couple different questions here. One person is saying, will the native compilation that I showed be available for ASP.NET 5? And then Al wants to know about the dev branches for ASP.NET. There's ASP.NET, and then there's .NET Core, and then there's some of this future work that's being done around .NET Native. Now, it is the intent that we enable .NET Native for multiple project types and for multiple operating systems. So while I showed a Hello World on Linux, because that's future work that we're looking at. Remember that this is the .NET Native technology that came from Windows Store, from Universal Applications. We want to enable this on the as many project types as makes sense.
Right. ASP.NET today does dynamic stuff, and so some of the native stuff we have as it is today doesn't support some of the dynamic compilation that we do in ASP.NET. But the long-term plan, as Scott said, is to get there. So when you first start seeing the code show up, so some of the native code did show up in the repos today, I believe. If you want to go grab out of the dev branches, but ASP.NET will not run there yet. But that is our long-term intent is to get it there. We actually have prototyped that in the lab before, and it cut our working set in half.
Holy cow!
The performance didn't increase on ASP.NET. ASP.NET's pretty fast already, but the working set did decrease in half.
Well, that's fantastic. So it feels like there's a lot of different things happening all at the same time, and we shouldn't conflate them.
Well, and it's also important to remember that things are more pluggable now than they ever were. Roslyn can be forked, and you can have your own version of it. You've got, the jitter, your own core CLR, your own core effects. The pieces can plug together more in more ways than I think people realize. And we're still all learning what is tightly bound and what is not.
Yeah.
All right, so here's a question from Mike Bates. Side by side, .NET 4.6 and .NET Core, can you please talk a little bit about how to successfully write code to target both these framework versions?
So when you file a new project and you make a new ASP.NET 5 application, remembering that ASP.NET 5 can run on .NET 4.6 or on .NET Core, by default, when you do a build, you're going to be building for both at the same time. And there's this thing called unified IntelliSense in Visual Studio. So if it sees you using functions that are not available in both places, it'll bang that method out, and it'll pop up a little.
As you type dot and it shows you the methods available to you, it will actually highlight the ones that are available that run on both platforms and which ones don't run on both platforms.
Right.
And at the same time, you can also, when you get to something that doesn't run on both platforms, what you're going to do is you're going to have to write different code for each of the platforms. So what you can do is you can ifdef the platform. And then there's a drop-down in the editor that lets you select which framework you actually want to use at that point.
From an editor perspective.
From an editor perspective. Wow. And it will actually bring IntelliSense for that particular framework that you selected.
So maybe I missed the first part. When you create a new project, you say you want
to
target
both. You're targeting both by default.
By default.
We're cross-compiling to both frameworks.
Oh, see, that's
why. The build is actually a double build.
That's amazing. And then when you're starting to use stuff, it will warn you, saying, hey, this won't work on...
Well, and even as you type, it will warn
and
you.
And even more so, let's say that you wanted to do something that wasn't supported, like read from the registry.
Right.
There is no read from the registry stuff in .NET Core. You need to decide, what does that mean for your application when you run your app that wants to read from the registry, except you want to run it on Linux? Do you throw a not implemented exception? Do you just say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that? It doesn't necessarily cripple the entire app, but it does mean something. So you get to decide. You can ifdef your way around that. You could build a plugin architecture to write to a text file that would be the registry on Linux. It's up to you.
That's really interesting with the ifdef sort of IntelliSense completion too. That will tell you this one or this one.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. All right, the next question from Dave. Will we see Aurelia integration within Visual Studio?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Here's the thing. why not? I mean, if...
Well, but see, you've got to be careful picking something.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I said, I don't know, you can maybe laugh or not, but if we pick something wrong and it doesn't become the new hotness,
yeah,
then what, right? That question, will we see blank integration within Visual Studio? Will we see React? Will we see Bootstrap? Will we see Angular? Will we see Aurelia? You know, at what point do you have to either make it extensible or do you have to bet on something? I've always said, and I think the boss agrees because he still lets me work here, that the web is going to figure these things out. And it would be better that we support the open web.
It's also going to change. The web is fluid. It doesn't stay the same. I mean, one framework's popular today, another one will be popular in a year from now. And so as Scott was saying before, our goal is to make the tools as pluggable as possible.
Right.
We might pick the most popular one to put in the box by default because we can't offer every one,
right,
but we're going to make it pluggable. So,
right,
you know, if you feel strongly about it, hopefully the community or the authors of that library can help plug that in directly into Visual Studio.
There was a concern that someone tweeted to me when I did the demo where I went into NuGet looking for JavaScript, and it upsold me to Bower. And someone said, wait a second, maybe Bower won't be around. Well, maybe it'll be NPM, or maybe it'll be Fufu, some new thing we never thought about.
Let's hashtag Fufu.
We have pluggable... You know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
Like, if there's concerns about Bower, maybe it'll be NPM, or maybe it'll be the next big thing.
Well, one cool thing to point out here, the Bootstrap stuff we talked about today, we didn't write it. That was just a community Bootstrap V6 that we recommended when you open the HTML file.
Which is actually similar to the Power... This is really like a representation of the new
PowerShell.
Microsoft. The PowerShell support.
Uh-huh.
You know, people have been saying on the user voice for Visual Studio, we want PowerShell support. Well, we went and we found some really great stuff that a community member went, we made a deal with them because it's just, there's no reason for us to write it ourselves.
So if there is a question of will we see blank support within Visual Studio, the answer is maybe, but if you really want it, you can actually work on it yourself.
That's one thing. We don't want to necessarily punt it. You know, yeah. Open source isn't an excuse to say, well, it's open source. You know, pull requests appreciated. But we want to make sure that any framework works well with ASP.NET.
Right. Love it. All right, so the next question is, when will .NET Core CLR run on Android?
So I made a joke someone took me seriously, though. I was in Sweden a couple of weeks ago, and I said that, you know, someone's trying to get the .NET Core to run on the PlayStation 2. And there was, like, a young person in the front row that was like, really? And I'm like, well, no, but yeah, maybe. Like, that's what's great about the .NET Core. Like, there's probably someone out there doing that.
I think the best way to answer this is right now our goal, our target as both the .NET Core team and our team is to ship ASP.NET 5 in RTM mm-hmm. on Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Exactly.
And so that's as soon as we RTM.
For production.
RTM that for production early next year. That's our primary goal right now. As soon as we get past that goal,
yeah,
I think you're going to see other platforms come online.
Just that alone is pretty amazing.
No, but,
I mean,
but like,
really.
We're messing around with Raspberry Pi, right? Yeah. Raspberry Pi is not a target platform for the Raspbian Linux distro, right? It's an ARM thing. But we do want ASP.NET on small devices, and we want to figure out what that looks like. We want the .NET Core CLR on other devices.
I mean, you think of your router at home. You probably have a router at home that's actually running some kind of web server that's hosting the interface that you use to program your router.
Mm-hmm.
We want ASP.NET to be something you could build that with if you wanted to.
But at the same time, we need to get this thing to run in Docker and in large swarms and be a production-ready Linux web server. So
First. You
have to pick one thing to focus on, and that's what we're focusing on.
Everyone's just all excited. They're like, well, I want this. Here's another question.
But the great thing is go figure it out, right?
Yeah, nice. With the new .NET CLI, how do the DNX, DNVM, DNU commands translate? Like, maybe I don't understand the question. CLI is the same everywhere, right?
No.
So CLI is basically a unification of...
CLI is command line interface,
yeah, that's right.
To be clear.
Yeah, exactly. But what we're calling .NET CLI, which Scott showed a little bit today, is a unification of the ASP.NET project system, how to build command line applications, how to do native compilation, all into one tool set. So we're trying to have one tool chain that lets you build .NET Core applications, whether those are ASP.NET applications or console applications or any other type of application. And so as that happens, you're going to see some of those commands that we have today translate. So like DNU will probably become NuGet. Or
part of .NET.
DNU restore, well, that should be NuGet. Or it actually will be NuGet, but the .NET CLI will actually just call into NuGet as you type something in .NET restore.
Exactly. So if you think about
It's a driver.
Right, exactly.
To drive other tools.
Go and Ruby and Python, you know, for the most part, they have that one thing, Go foo, Ruby foo, Python foo. Node, has NPM and things like that. Ruby has Ruby, and then it has, like, you know, RVM. We want to make it so there's fewer concepts so that someone can go and say .NET and then run something and .NET compile, but also to make those commands pluggable. So that someone could swap the compiler out, or swap the make system out, or swap out the
We call it a driver internally, where .NET is the driver, and it drives all these command line tools to do the right things. And as a developer, you don't have to know a lot of concepts or all those tools. You just actually just say .NET compile, and who knows what that fires. That fires off the native compiler, or it fires off something that just does a compile check to see if your code has errors in it or not.
Right. Now, to be clear, we say driver. We're not talking about device driver.
Right.
But it is the driver that is driving the car that is .NET. So it'd just be nice to be able to do everything from a command line that .NET. Is .NET.
And another way to think of it
just
as well
is... Just like the Azure command line, by the way.
It'll also be one tool chain of download as well. So whether you're going to, you know, it'll be a simple NuGet-ish download to get it on your machine as well. So we, our big goal, Scott and I are really passionate about this, is we want .NET to be something that the guy in high school or the guy in college can try on their own, and not, you know, on any platform without a 1 gig download. The idea is to have the whole thing in, you know, under 50 megs that you can download on any platform and build
cool apps. If I go to, like, Girls Develop It and teach a bunch of high school people to write code right now, they come in with lots of different laptops.
Yeah.
Some come in with Macs, and some come in with Windows, and some come in with little, you know, netbooks. And I want to be able to have all of those girls have a successful experience in .NET, where I want them to go and say .NET, whatever, .NET, init, and maybe they can make a web page in 10 minutes. Like, whereas right now, let's just be frank, right now the reality is you need Windows, and you need a X gig download of Visual Studio and a reboot.
And you need an admin privilege to actually be able to install the thing.
But I want to grab Visual Studio Code, a line or two, and within 15 minutes, I want to make someone successful. So we talk about the command line interface person and the IDE person. We talk about the 40 or 50-year-old enterprise developer who has got lots of experience, but we have to also think about the teenagers that are learning this kind of stuff. And I think that we're trying to build a modular .NET for the future that will satisfy both of those people.
The cool thing is, as you brought up Ubuntu and did this demo, I was having flashbacks to my time in college, because that's what I used to do all of my research. And it was kind of cool. I was like, wow, I wish I could have had this during my college days.
Well, why can't the language you want and the experience you want be on the operating system of your choice, if that is, in fact, Ubuntu?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, so next question. What are the improvements on authentication and authorization ASP.NET 5? There's a lot of stuff in there.
They're mainly just the same authentication authorization that we had in the previous platform ported over right now.
Plus Azure can plug in, right? And you can, like, when you say authorization and authentication, like, the pipeline is the same. But there are more options when you host that in the cloud.
Right.
Like, you can go and do, like, an intranet app in the cloud and have it go Azure AD.
But that's not an ASP.NET 5 thing. I mean, you can take any web application, put it in Azure web apps, and there's a feature called EasyAuth, which will actually let you...
EasyAuth, crazy. Oh.
Let you actually protect your entire application with Active Directory without writing any code.
But is it easy?
EasyAuth is crazy. I did an EasyAuth. If you go to Azure Friday, go friday.azure.com, the person that built EasyAuth showed it to me, and he took, like, a random Node application and threw it into Azure and then made it an intranet app, right? It's not on the intranet, but it's authenticated against Azure Active Directory, and it was like 5 minutes. It was ridiculous. So, EasyAuth.
I'll tell you the cool story about that is that code is actually from ASP.NET. We actually wrote the AD code, and the web app guys took it and used it to build EasyAuth.
That's cool.
All right, well, to finish up, what are some of the sort of the final sort of things you want to tell developers out there that you think, hey, you should look at this right now? Because, and then tell us.
I say, take some of your stuff that you're going to build, or you have been building, or you're getting ready to build, and see if it will do what you want. See if ASP.NET 5 is going to work for you, whether it works on Windows or on Linux or on Mac. If you're on a Mac and maybe you went to Mac, but you still have feelings for C Sharp, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's time to give us a call, Netflix and chill.
That's right.
And try to make that happen on a Mac or Linux, the operating system of your choice, the editor of your choice, and give it a try. So get.asp.net.
Awesome.
The point of today and the RC release and the go live was mainly we want to tell our customers now's a good time to try to move your apps to ASP.NET 5.
Yep.
By the time you've actually done that work, we probably will have RTM'd the product. And that was kind of the gist of the announcement today, is now it's time to go look at this thing.
That's pretty cool. I'm personally very excited. I think I started writing some ASP.NET stuff, and it's really fun. I did the whole Visual Studio Code thing. It's really, really, really cool, and it's something that I've enjoyed doing. So now, last question from Michael Palermo. I can't leave this out. What unit test frameworks support ASP.NET 5 today?
I think we've got XUnit.
We do have XUnit.
And then MS Test.
I'm not sure about MS Test, but we definitely have XUnit. I think we have both, yeah.
And I don't know about NUnit. I don't know what the current status of NUnit on core is. Not. That's a good question. But I know XUnit is good. And I believe that MS Test is.
I think MS Test is as well.
Yeah, we can
well,
check.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Again, we're here at the Connect 2015 event. Dan's got a really good guest lined up right now, so we're going to toss it on over to him. Dan, it's all you, buddy.